You on tape? Okay, if the meeting will come to order, please, and for the record, today is March 24th, 1982, and this is the Health Education and Social Services Committee. We have on our agenda today, let's see, House Bill 11, House Bill 798, House Bill 801, and we're gonna take, let's see, at 4 o'clock, we have a teleconference on House Bill 801, and I think we have witnesses now for House Bill 11, so let's take House Bill 11 up first, and Representative Rogers, who's the prime mover on this bill, is here, and if you'll come to the table and give us your views on this second sponsor substitute for House Bill number 11, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Brian Rogers, State Representative for District 20. This bill's been before the committee once before and did move from the House HES Committee last year with a HES Committee substitute. This year, I introduced a sponsor substitute based on some work done over the interim, suggestions of some of the consumers and the midwives around the state, and I finally gave in to the Division of Occupational Licensing after over a fiscal note on this bill. I should point out there's tremendous interest on the issue of lay midwifery in the state. There is a video teleconference tomorrow in the Senate HES Committee on companion Senate legislation, and this teleconference may set a record for this legislature and a number of persons testifying, or the number of persons wishing to testify. Apparently 99 are signed up in Sitka alone and several hundred statewide to testify tomorrow. The people are signing up as to whether they're pro or con, and it's running 8-1 in favor of the bill right now. The purpose of the bill is to try to address the issue of freedom of choice in childbirth and also consumer protection in the procurement of services related to the childbirth. Right now, we have essentially two levels. You have the licensed medical providers, either nurses or doctors, and then you have unlicensed midwives. There's some debate as to whether the practice of midwifery is the practice of medicine. I would say that it's not. Others allege that it is. There are a number of complications which can occur during a birth, and it's my feeling that the consumer deserves at least some level of training. However, in some areas of the state, the practice of midwifery has gone back for hundreds and thousands of years, and it's not my interest to regulate that. What this bill attempts to do is to balance the interest of the position of say, the medical, established medical community on one side, who says they want no lay midwives whatsoever, and the position at the other extreme for no regulation whatsoever, by allowing a mid-level of voluntary licensure. A lay midwife would have to meet the criteria set forth in this bill to be licensed as a licensed lay midwife. That person meets these requirements and could advertise then as a licensed lay midwife and would be given in emergency situations certain power that unlicensed midwives do not have. It would be voluntary licensure, so those who didn't want to deal with it wouldn't have to, but a consumer can go to the midwife, and I believe most would choose to go to a licensed rather than an unlicensed lay midwife. There are some important sections in here that are disclosure that are required by the midwife that actually I think would be a good idea in many cases. There's a requirement for informed consent form in page 6, line 10, sub 120. a form that goes to the consumer that describes the philosophy of practice, the education, training, experiences, services, and fees, and also makes available statistical information on the past history of that midwife, so that a woman who wants to know, is this midwife one who has problems and always has to call in doctors, or has had a death in the past, or anything like that, so the consumer knows, has good information on which to make a decision. The one problem we have that I think has increased the need for this bill this year is there have been federal cutbacks in the funding for transportation from the bush to urban settings or to the larger bush communities for midwife services, and I think as a result there's going to be an increase in the practice of midwifery around the state. The main change in the bill from last year is the addition of a board regulating regulating midwives. I opposed this very strenuously because I felt that we didn't need another board or commission. However, when we got a fiscal note on the bill, the fiscal note on the version last year was for $118,000. Roughly $18,000 of that was for the department support functions, and then there was this $100,000 for hearings on licensed midwives. And somehow they came out with costs of $50,000 per hearing, with a hearing officer at $55 an hour, a court reporter at $20 an hour, and judicial process at $1,000 each. I have no idea how they came up with that $100,000 number, but that was enough to kill the bill last year. This year, with a substitute, now that we have a board, instead of the division doing it, the fiscal note has dropped to $24,000.
Who did this?
We're both done by the Division of Occupational Licensing. I haven't the slightest idea why having a board saves $100,000, but because it saves $100,000, I'm willing to accept a board of midwifery in order to have some chance of getting this bill. So the main change is cutting $100,000 from the course by adding a board. There were a couple of other changes that I should point out. There are changes in the number of births per year that a person, that a licensed midwife must participate in to be able to continue to be licensed. Under the bill, as it said last year, it appears that only two or three people would have qualified for licensure. The second sponsor substitute reduces the number of births that a person must perform every year. I think that's particularly important in rural Alaska. Some information I think people should be aware of: roughly 5% of all births in Alaska are occurring at home right now. Many physicians refuse to participate in home births, which I guess is their right, but I also believe that individuals have the right to make medical decisions about themselves. I believe that the effect of the passage of House Bill 11 will be to encourage those persons who are going to choose home birth anyway to choose to do it with people who are more qualified to perform home birth than people who are less qualified. There are people who say that they are a midwife, they've been around one birth. I don't believe that's the case, but there are people who represent themselves to be midwives who have attended one birth. This would give those consumers who don't want to choose a hospital setting the ability to choose someone with some qualifications. Now, they still would have the opportunity to choose licensed physicians. They still would have the opportunity to choose a certified nurse midwife. Most home birth parents say that they would choose an out-of-hospital birth with a midwife, even if that were against the law. It is not today. Other information, there's been a lot of information presented to the committee before. I think the main reason the bill has been returned to this committee was the addition of the board, and I wanted the committee to be aware that the only reason for that is the savings of money. And I'd answer any questions people might have on this conversation.
Representative Martin.
Thank you. I don't have the fiscal note you have of Senator Rogers pertaining to Division of O&L, we have a zero of one for the fiscal.
There are two fiscal notes. One is for the committee substitute dated May 22nd, '81, and then there's one dated February 26th, '82 that is for the second sponsor substitute.
We have a second substitute one on March 17th. It said zero, but does
okay, it that's for the Department of Health and Social Services.
Oh, well, you have another one on the July. Thank you very much. Maybe I'll just have this for staff to do on the first doctor.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Often we'll answer O&LY because the other day we had another bill where it looks like they were using that particular new board to pick up costs for other programs that weren't paying for themselves. Do we have an emergency clause in here, like a Good Samaritan Act or something like that? That, you know, a lot of times people find themselves suddenly in an emergency situation that would call for aid of any human being nearby to help out and deliver.
Mr. Chairman, I think that that's probably not required and that would be covered elsewhere under Good Samaritan laws. Essentially, the license that's issued under this allows only a couple of things. One, it allows them to say that they're licensed, which means that they meet these requirements. The other main effect of the license is to allow the midwife to do more things in an emergency situation. They may do three things in an emergency situation which are otherwise considered the practice of medicine. That is, injections for maternal hemorrhage that could be done in an emergency situation. Right now, it is against the law for a midwife to give an injection. The second thing would be penetration of human tissue for an emergency episiotomy. Penetration of human tissue is the practice of medicine, so that's currently illegal. And the third one is use of oxygen. Under this bill, those three things in an emergency could be done by a licensed midwife and stay within the law.
I'm very supportive of the bill. It's just it's another.
Well, I think you're okay on your Good Samaritan.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Ball. Did you have any questions?
No, not at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Have you had any opposition from the medical profession on this?
Have I had opposition from the medical community on this? Yes. There are a number of doctors who believe that no one other than a doctor should be able to handle the birth process with a woman and would like to outlaw. There are doctors who would like to outlaw completely anything other than a hospital birth with a doctor. I believe it's a freedom of choice issue. And I also believe, based on the surveys of the home birth parents, that they're gonna break the law anyway, if that were the law. So I don't think that's an enforceable law. I think it's probably unconstitutional. There are those who would like to say that if it's going to be a home birth, only doctors and or certified nurse midwives could perform. There are areas of the state where there are no doctors or certified nurse midwives who are willing to perform home birth. So again, we'd still have the unregulated situation under what those people would like, except that they wouldn't even be able to have a midwife with them. This, to some extent, authorizes, it legalizes the practice of midwifery and the representation of oneself as a licensed lay midwife. However, depending on your reading of what's the practice of medicine, it could be legal right now.
Senator Rogers sparked another thought that was ongoing in my mind. Why don't we limit it since the doctors are employees identification is just OGBYN, because obviously a lot of midwives have a lot more practice and delivery than many of our GPs.
That's correct.
Can you put that close in there? Is that why members that you put in?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Just more than what the doctors
there are some interesting studies around. There are conflicting studies of the birth process. there are those which show that, the safety record of lay midwives is better than that of OBGYNs in some countries and some parts of this country. I didn't bring all those conflicting studies because I didn't think you can read them all and you can then pull out whichever one meets your argument, so I'd rather not do that.
Okay. So they have to the requirements are to participate then in 20 deliveries and handle 10 of them yourself, right?
That's correct, as well as taking an exam that covers all of the. They're also required to keep these medical histories and to for each of those and pass an exam developed by the board.
What where is the reference to sponsor here?
The sponsor is under the Midwife Apprenticeship Program, page 8, lines 13 through 22. And a sponsor is a licensed midwife. In other words, a licensed midwife to teach other licensed midwives.
Okay. And then they have to, the licensed midwife then would have to recommend that the, or would have to see that the mother received a general physical examination by a physician, if possible.
Yes.
That's what I see that.
That if possible is essentially to take care of Bush's situation,
okay,
where it may be impossible. Or to take care of a situation where a woman walks in to a lay midwife's home or office and says, my contractions are 2 minutes apart, can you take care of me? That they felt that there might be might not be time for a doctor.
Uh-huh. And then the definition of medical emergency on page 8. For example, would an episiotomy be a medical emergency?
An episiotomy would be the solution to a medical emergency. That is to say that if there were trouble with passage through the birth canal, the episiotomy would, and that constituted, and it constituted a medical emergency, then an episiotomy would be authorized by the midwife. Under current law, a midwife who's attending a birth cannot perform an emergency episiotomy and rather has to allow the further canal to
care. And if such a medical emergency developed and an episiotomy was performed and then a repair was undertaken, would they be required to consult with a physician on that or not?
We did not deal with the issue of repair. I would assume that the repair would be required to be done by a physician. That may be an oversight in the bill.
No, you have done the scope correctly. It's called suture.
Okay, yes, suturing is allowed. I'm sorry.
Questions. The difference now between the second sponsor substitute and the original bill that was passed out of this committee last year is simply the addition of that board. Is that basically it?
No, the board and some of the powers of the board. In the old bill, the items that would be on the exam were in the bill. In the new one, the items on the exam are up to the board. So that is a change there. It relates to the fact that there is a board. The other one was the reduction in the number of births that were required to each year in order to container licensure. And I believe those are the major changes. There are some other less important changes, I believe.
All right, thank you. Any more questions of the witness?
One more. Somebody, you said you didn't particularly care for the board and all that. I'm looking at it as a positive way. Wouldn't it give status to this, what I would call a professional group, and also an avenue where upgrading and continuous education can be a source of?
It would provide that opportunity, and it would upgrade, it would make it a more out of public, I suppose. My own feeling, though, if I had my way, we'd be reducing the number of health-related boards and consolidating them and getting away from each board to protect each person's turf. So, to that extent, this board then becomes a board designed to protect the turf of midwives, the same way we've seen in all the others. Perhaps the midwives are going to be more reasonable than some of the other professions we've had to deal with in recent years.
Would you be amenable to seeing this board join with the Board of Medicine?
No, and the Board of Medicine, the medical board would also not be amenable to that. According to my last information, talking with them last year, there was a bill proposed by the governor that would have put them under the board, and the objections were so strong they backed off of that very quickly. I would, if the doctors, if there were more lay people and fewer doctors in the medical board, I'd consider.
I think there might be a little trouble there. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. For the record, Representative Martin and Malone are present at the meeting today for quorum, and let the record show that Mr. Rick Urian is also present in the room, seated next to Mr. Rogers, Representative Rogers. Our next witness would be Dr. Rabeau. You want to be the next witness on this? And then maybe Joan Brooks can tell us about these fiscal notes. Are you going to do that?
Okay. I'm Dr. E.S. Rabeau, and I'm representing the Department of Health and Social Services, and I'm here to testify on House Bill number 11. Department has no problem whatsoever with the ideas expressed behind this bill, but our position paper, which I think committee members have copies of, clearly delineate our difficulties with it. And basically our problem is that the bill wants to license people because it will set some standards so that the average member of the public can say, when they go to, for example, to use a midwife, as to whether or not this person is what they're cracked up to be. Licensure is the state guaranteeing that people have certain qualifications and abilities to perform at a certain level. This bill doesn't do that, though. That's basically our problem with it. If I could digress just slightly and talk just about midwifery. Midwifery in the United States has taken a far different turn than it did in Europe. In Europe, it is established common medical practice, and in many countries on the continent is the mandatory method for delivery of normal children, or normal delivery of children, so we get that straight. In some countries, for example, like the Netherlands, say they will not pay for a physician to attend a delivery at home unless there are some special circumstances called for. And this is somewhat similar to Sweden, Germany, and in France. In this country, unfortunately, midwifery never became established as a profession like it was on the continent. And what happened is we have what we call the granny midwife, which were basically usually older women in the rural community that did the deliveries. And this is not to say that they didn't have or didn't develop skills over the year through experience. But we never did get the formal trained, I hate the term lay midwife, because these people are really professionals. Finally, in this country, what happened, and it really started with the visiting nurse in Kentucky, we finally got around to taking nurses and training them in midwifery and established the profession of certified nurse midwife. And this is comparable, basically, in midwifery to the midwives of most of the European nations. Now, we have no objection whatsoever to this type of individual being licensed. I'd like to point out that the state of Washington, just after a number of years of thoroughly examining things, just passed the legislation in 1981 on the licensure of midwives. And they, as most of the other states that have recent legislation on midwives, have some standards that must be met, which this bill doesn't do, and this is our main objection to it. For example, Arizona says they must, and this, theirs is of recent origin, that, and this is a state whose legislation is looked upon with approbation by most of the midwifery groups throughout the country. And they say they must have a course of instruction, that they have to observe a minimum of 10 births, and they have to deliver at least 15 under direct supervision of a physician or a licensed midwife or a certified nurse midwife. And then the examination is of three parts. And there's a written examination, which is designed to test their knowledge of the instruction that they receive. There's an oral examination, which is designed to test their clinical judgment in midwifery case management. And this is one of the problems that we think that this bill before you will not address, and that it does not address the question of clinical judgment. And then on top of that, they have a practical exam, which is designed to test that they have mastered the skills necessary for the practice of midwifery. In Seattle, there is a school of midwifery that's been in existence since 1978. It's a three-year course. 2 years if they're a nurse. If they're not a nurse, it's a three-year course. And the state basically requires that people have those credentials. Now, one of the problems is, and this is what the opponents to this say, is then you're going to deprive too many people of being able to be licensed. And my argument is that you will license the people that are capable of performing at a level. There are, in the state of Alaska, for example, there are midwives here who were trained on the continent who would certainly be eligible and would be very competent to carry on. We worry about those that are less trained. A couple other things I'd like to point out, that whenever you set up a credentialing mechanism, whether it's licensure or certification or registration or whatever, it is a little unusual that if you set up some kind of a credentialing mechanism, that you allow people that are not credentialed to do it. Now, Alaska, I think justification has reasons that you should be exceptions made for that. And I think Representative Rogers alluded to them, that basically in the rural villages that Native women have been doing deliveries for a long time. It's interesting to note that midwifery in the United States, when it was at its height, was being done in the rural and poor, isolated sections of the country. As the number of deliveries by midwives fell off until the recent Renaissance, which is now about 10 years duration, and it's changed. It's now mainly being done in urban settings for middle class individuals. He has objections to a board. No two ways on that. You don't have to have a board that is basically an autonomous professional group. You can set up an advisory group and put the powers of examination and determination within the director of licensing. And the other thing that I'd like to stress is that whatever you do, that there is provision for continued competency. In other words, either re-examination, continuing education, or peer review. Now, about the only way I can see peer review being done in this state with individual, independent practitioners scattered all over Allendale is by a very precise set of reports that would be necessary. It's the only way you're going to be able to follow. I am particularly concerned because in order to make this alternative form of delivery palatable and to get the medical profession involved in it, and you must have it. You cannot have any type of midwifery if there isn't some type of a collaborative relationship with the medical profession. Because when you have an emergency, you're not dealing with one life, you're dealing with two lives. You're dealing with the life of the mother and the infant. And so there must be arrangements made so that there is some type of a collaborative relationship. I'm not arguing against independent practice, but there must be an arrangement made that if there is a problem, that it can be immediately referred to and handled by a physician. I think the medical profession probably is slowly changing its viewpoints toward midwifery. The certified nurse midwife is very demonstrably taking place in the role of obstetrics and is in practice in this state. Now, what we're suggesting is that the standards for any licensed midwife should be of a somewhat comparable level to that. I'm not saying they have to be nurse midwives, but I say they should have the same type of training and skills as a nurse midwife. Our position paper, I think, is reasonably succinct.
Okay.
Okay.
Representative Martin.
Dr. You alluded to a couple scenarios as to why what's happening, but one scenario seemed to be that the doctors are outpricing themselves, and even middle-class people can't afford a doctor's services. So it comes to a certain point where you must find other solutions, and the naturalist solution for years, all kinds of societies, is natural childbirth. That economic factor there alone is making many hospitals. In this state, having birth clinics just to compete against home delivery. So rather than quality of who's qualified and who's not qualified, it seems to me to boil down to money. Who's going to help someone at a reasonable price?
There's no question about it. There's a large economic factor plus the fact that there is a change in how people view health. They now feel that they have a responsibility for their own health and that they approach it differently than people have in the past. And there's no question about it that childbirth normally is a natural phenomenon. And I have no problem whatsoever philosophically with that. My problem basically with it is that this bill will not do what you want it to do. And that is to be able to that the consumer that goes and says, you know, I can't afford the hospital, I can't afford the doctor, and I want to have my baby at home, or whatever reason, looks around and says, well, I want to get myself a midwife. And this says that you're going to regulate it so that the consumers can find somebody that they'll know will be competent. And what we're saying is this will not allow you to have that. These people need no training whatsoever under this. They need absolutely no training whatsoever. They got to be 18 years old and have a high school diploma, and they've got to have participated in 20 births.
And passed an exam.
Thank you, Chief. In the position paper that you provided to the committee, three items
one of which I understand fairly well from your comments, the requirements of formal and practical training. And you mentioned in your comments the requirement for a collaborative relationship with a licensed physician. Now, the way that the position paper is written, I get the understanding that that should be a, position of the department is that that should be a part of the legislation. It should be part of the act or part of the law. And could you elaborate on how those things are incorporated into other statutes and other jurisdictions where they may exist?
In the certified nurse midwife and the physician assistant statutes, representative,
for example,
both requires that they have a collaborative relationship with a physician.
What is that? Can you explain that in lay terms what it means by a collaborative relationship?
Yeah, that means that there is a physician whom there's a complete understanding as to what the scope of their practice is and to when they will refer patients. Every midwifery act that I've looked at, and I've looked at about seven different states, every one of them specifies, you know, that there's only certain things they should do, and at a certain point they must be able to refer them to a physician. Now, we think in the interest of a continuum of care that this is a relationship that should be established in advance. Now, whether they have an examination by the physician or not, I won't even bother to comment on that. But there should be some kind of relationship between the practitioner and the physician.
And that's something that apparently is legislated and can be legislated.
Yes, sir. And it is right now.
And in the position paper also discusses an issue regarding prenatal blood work and newborn metabolic testing, and I don't understand that at all. So can you elaborate on that?
Yes, sir. The law requires that there be a blood test taken of the mother to test for syphilis in prior to birth. That's the first thing. The other has to do with after the birth, and that is to take sputum from the infant, and so that we can test it, and it's sent out. We test it for several congenital metabolic problems, phenylketonuria, PKU, you probably recognize that. We test it for hypothyroidism, and now we're in the process of adding a third congenital test to it. And it's very simple. It's a special kind of blotting paper, and they just take a drop of blood, and from these tests, because it's important, if an infant has any of these metabolic disorders, if it's known early, you can prevent permanent damage, and it's usually brain damage we're talking about.
These are required by current laws of practitioner.
Yes, sir. And that would happen. We would suggest that it would be added into a bill, and that they would be required to do this as well.
Thank you for letting me.
Any other questions of the witness?
Chairman, can I respond very briefly?
Oh, yes, you may.
I just like to say that on the blood test, I agree wholeheartedly, and on the collaborative relationship, I do agree to the extent that a doctor is willing to enter into the relationship. The problem will occur that essentially in a community that has one doctor and one midwife, if the doctor refuses, the midwife can't practice. And that's the reason that I oppose putting it in the bill. If there's some way to say that the midwife shall attempt to set up a collaborative relationship, I'd have no problem.
Do you want to comment on that, Dr. Rebold?
No, I know full well where he's coming from. It's been reported to us just recently that women who are going to have deliveries by, to use the euphemism, alternative methods, are having problems trying to get a blood type and hemoglobin taken. And the bill addresses itself to that. It does give a legal right to have these things done.
Doctor, on the blood testing, wouldn't they have the state lab, or they could send us a blood sample, even private labs couldn't. Can't like to have the individual come in?
It's been reported to me that a private lab has refused to take the blood work from.
Was that state lab?
We don't do some of those things. The serology we do, yes.
I think the private lab is probably afraid of the liability that might be involved, or might arise from it, you know. Without, but in this bill, it's covered, it authorizes, but I don't think.
What I am suggesting is that those that be licensed should be able to meet a standard similar to the certified nurse midwife. And they don't have to be nurses at all, they can be, have nothing but midwifery training. And there are individuals I know personally in the state who have been, for example, trained in foreign countries that are absolutely competent. What we're suggesting is that don't mix it up by allowing, it's a terrible term, lay midwives who have had very little experience and no training to become licensed.
I understand, thank you very much. Any other witnesses?
Mr. Chairman, I think you wanted me to respond.
Please, would you? Be as brief as you possibly can, because we're going to run out of time here very shortly.
Yes, sir, one of the reasons for the enlarged fiscal note last session was because that we were basing that on the use of a hearing officer without the medical assistance and nursing assistance, and the hearing officer at that time, our history showed, was running in the amount of $50,000 per hearing, and we had averaged two hearings a year under this bill. Under the present bill, we have no problem with it, other than like to bring to the committee's attention on page 1, line 28, where it says, nothing in this section prohibits the practice of midwifery in the state without a license. In enforcement end, if you license a midwife, they commit a violation, and you go after them and say you've committed this violation, you're subject to a hearing, you stand there and rip the license up in front of you. You cannot detect them for unlicensed activity, nor can you prohibit them from any further activity, because the bill says it doesn't prohibit from licensing. That's basically the fact. I have no other further comments unless the committee has.
That's kind of an interesting point, Representative Martin.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, Doug, but at the same time, we'll also, if we don't have that clause in there, it might be assumed that you're prohibiting a natural wanting to help your neighbor. If the fact circumstances develop as such as a sudden delivery and you want to help your neighbor, or someone that does have had experience before comes over and helps as a midwife, should they then become concerned and say, well, I can't help you because I heard about some law that prohibits me? It just seems to be a natural thing that we're going to prohibit people from doing, unless we have that exclusion there.
Well, we're talking about practice here.
Somebody
assists in the delivery of a birth, one thing, if they're called in to assist and receive a fee for it, that's something else.
Thank you. Margaret King is our next witness. Oh, I thought you were on this one. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. All right. Any other witnesses for House Bill 11?
I would like to comment on that if I could.
Please. Give your name for the record, Julie, please.
My name is Patrick Durkin. I live in Indian, Alaska. I have to plead ignorance to the particular things that this bill says. The reason I would like to make a comment is that 4 months ago, I became the proud father of the cutest little girl in the state, and we delivered the baby at home with the assistance of a midwife. And I would just like, for the record, to say what a tremendous experience it was. In every respect, my wife happens to be an RN herself. She works in the critical care unit of Alaska Hospital, and there was no way that she wanted to have the baby in the hospital. It was her choice mostly to have the baby at home, and we have been nothing but pleased with that decision. Our experience with the particular midwife, Chris Rushing, was the midwife at our birth, was tremendous, both before, during, and after the birth. In the discussions I've had with her since then, she has brought to my attention what a difficult situation now exists for midwives, and in commenting on what the previous witness said about lab work in Anchorage, it is simply not available. The labs have refused to accept any of the work that from midwives. There were apparently a couple of doctors who were willing to cooperate, and two of those people have left town, and one who still remains in town is no longer cooperative, and the reason being that he has been told by his colleagues not to cooperate, and I feel that's a very unfortunate situation.
Is this midwife that you speak of a certified nurse midwife?
I believe she is a nurse, yes, and I don't think she's certified only because she's not licensed, and she received her midwifery training in the state of California. Was totally competent and excellent in our experience. As I said, I don't have particular knowledge of the specifics of this bill, but with the situation as it now exists, it's just not a good situation. I think some action should be taken to make provisions for those midwives to be able to operate, for them to have access to the facilities, particularly the lab facilities that they need, and to have some kind of structure set up so that they can get the cooperation with the medical people, with the doctors in the hospital, that is necessary in the event that there is some kind of emergency situation that exists. In reference to the point was just made about enforcement, approximately a month after my birth experience with my child, I happened to be at a neighbor's house, a friend's house one morning. When I got there, I found her in labor. Her husband was out of town on the North Slope. We tried to get her to the hospital, and before we got her out of the bedroom, I wound up delivering the baby right there. And I would have been very uncomfortable to know that I had been doing something illegal. That's it.
I think you're protected under the Good Samaritan laws, anyhow. Do we know how many nurse midwives are practicing in Anchorage?
I don't have those figures.
Don't have any idea. Does anybody have any idea? Maybe we could find that out. That'd be kind of interesting to know. Matter of fact, how many are practicing in the state?
Yeah.
You know,
I think we'll find it out for you next week.
Okay, good.
That's pretty much all I wanted to say.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other witnesses on House Bill 11? All right, thank you very much. All right.
Not that I had asked for some amendments on some of these things that come up, particularly the blood test question. Obviously, probably shouldn't be dealt with. I would do that.
Okay. Well, I think we'll have a work session on this. We have a work session scheduled next week on this. Barbara, do you know? All right, I have to leave the meeting now. Representative Martin, maybe you can take over.
I'll take it easy,
then. Huh?
I thought you were going to close
them. And, yeah, it was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We have one more bill to take up, which is 798, and then we can have this, and then we have a show conference. Yeah, I have a book for the finance.
I think you should be taking my interest in that budget.
I will, thank you. You don't need to worry about work.
Let's see if I can work it away. I've been getting all the way to August. Okay, we'll take House Bill 798 up right now. What time are we supposed to be on, Jack?
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock?
teleconference.
There is a bad lizard in Kodiak. I don't know how many people there are expecting that's going to be called.
See, on 798, of the two people who need to testify, is this your only chance?
Yeah, I know that you're under time constraint, and I think the drone board is to have
you flexible to come back?
Certainly, always.
Okay. And
sure,
you're flexible too. Would you mind if we put it off and then come to you? Thank you. Okay, then Fred, we'll take your bill up. Soon as we get you hooked on, let's go first. This is a hospital in East Anchorage. Okay.
801.
In Cordova.
Yeah.
They got a medical building.
This is one for East Anchorage, isn't it? The hospital.
You want me to open it up?
Sure, Jack.
Yeah.
They cash in the building.
Right. You haven't had a medical response from there either.
Yeah, move up the table.
Hey, Fred. Come on, move on.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in Doc's chair.
In stuff in Kodiak. They said they couldn't get
Kodiak teleconference.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Yeah, you're most welcome. That's the chairman for the day.
Kodiak teleconference.
In a short time, you'll be the only one here.
Okay,
that's right.
Very true.
Chairman. Oh, okay, I'd like to test the microphone here.
Mary Jo, can you hear me?
Mary Jo, can you hear us in Kodiak? That'll be a time when we take this thing.
Sounds like they have a pretty good blizzard there.
I just talked to her, but you're already getting
close to school, so.
Can anybody hear me?
This might be shorter than we expected.
I guess we're ready to get started with today's teleconference. Here with us in June, Representative Malone, Representative Jaroff, Representative Martin, who will be co-chair of today's teleconference. Representative Martin.
Okay, thank you very much, Jack, and good afternoon to everybody from beautiful Kodiak. To begin off on the testimony of House Bill 801, we'd like to listen to Representative Fred Zaroff, the prime sponsor. Mr. Zaroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity there to be before the committee today, and especially appreciate the committee arranging the teleconference so that people in Kodiak could attend and also have input. As you are probably aware, you have received a number of correspondence in relation to House Bill 801, which is the daycare facility for Kodiak. I won't share with you my personal copy here of about 100 public opinion messages, but I will share with you, and I would like to have these back if I could, responses from the children of the daycare facility in Kodiak, particularly those that will be directly affected by having to move. And I would
those out to you so you can go ahead and look at some of those now, if you will. Daycare facility, the one particularly in question at this time, is one that is operated by a nonprofit corporation called Small World Incorporated. And it is a nonprofit daycare center whose sole purpose is to provide a comprehensive and reasonably priced child care service to the community. It is composed of a board of directors that are elected as a general membership, with each parent that has a child in a facility serving as a member of the corporation. Use of Small World or the daycare facility is not based on any discrimination of any kind. It is presently serving over one half of the children in the state daycare assistance in the Kodiak area. The Small World program, if you look in the packet of information that we have for you, is divided into five components or five parts. The kindergarten program and the daycare program that services children 3 to 5 are the ones that will be ultimately affected. They are the ones using the Community Baptist Church at this time and have received notice of eviction, if you will. I'm not sure if that's a harsh term to use. At this time, they were given notice there that the church would like to utilize the facility for other church-related activities. And roughly speaking, we're talking about 45 students that will be affected by this particular program. There are three other programs that fall under the realm of Small World. The toddler program 1 through 3, ages 1 through 3, are presently taking place in another facility. And then we have an after-school program involves students ages 6 through 10, and a preschool program involving students 3 to 4, which at the present time are being conducted in the old hospital facility, the Griffin Building, which is also houses the social services programs there conducted by the state. I will also point out to you that
additional testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Other pieces of information in your packet that relate to the activities of Small World. And I would like to point out that there is one in particular, as well as the various supported documents from the city and borough. But we did acquire some additional information from the state of Alaska Department of Labor, of which I would share with you at this time. Approximately 75% of the female applicants in the active and inactive files at the Kodiak Employment Center are mothers, and many of these mothers would not be able to work if it were not for the excellent child care provided by the Kodiak Daycare Facility. So if funding is not appropriate, or if another alternative site is not selected for the daycare facility, along with the possible closing down of Small World, we're going to find probably in not necessarily an unemployment, but a work situation where people are going to find themselves having to remain at home to take care of their children. I would probably think, Mr. Chairman, that the people in Kodiak, I understand, are experiencing now some inclement weather, and those that did attend the Legislative Information Office or at the Legislative Information Office now would probably want to add additional testimony. And I will also mention that we have, through my office here, been looking at various options in terms of a solution to this particular problem, and I would go over those with the committee either at a later
date or after people from COIAC have had the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Representative Zaroff, and it looks like Representative Malone may have a question or two. Also, thank you for sharing these special notes of personal design by the many students at the Small World. However, a lot of them, some of them say, would you please give us money? And I want him, sir, not to embarrass, but have you given your annual contribution yet? Then also there's a few personal ones here. Yeah, I wish I received something like this. I like you. I love you. You got quite a family down there, sir. Mr. Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to say that I am impressed with the information submitted not only by the people who submitted the petition and support to our attending the daycare center in Kodiak, but also the other information, background information that's been submitted by Mr. Zaroff on the legislation. He's gone through a lot of work to provide information to the committee. I appreciate it very much. I wish all the bills that came to the committee had this sort of background information developed.
Thank you, Representative Malone. And so that we can save time for the people of Kodiak, I'd like to ask in order that they have on the list here Ms. Karen Salang, Sandra Unwa, and Susan DeWitt, both three witnesses, please.
I just wonder what the glass is. Can I have glass?
Representative Zaroff, and I'd like to address Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm Karen Salang, the director of Small World. Small World is formed specifically to provide quality developmental child care at a reasonable price to the Kodiak community. We adhere to the rate guidance set by the state for the daycare assistance program. Daycare assistance participants comprise mostly of single parent families. Many are single parent fathers who depend on viable service in order to maintain their status in the work field. Many of our single parent mothers depend on their child care and attending a state licensed facility in order to qualify for the daycare assistance program. The high cost of private care would force many of these mothers onto welfare. The need for reliable and quality care increases as the economy demands, and there are more two parent families than both parents find it necessary to work in order to meet the high cost of living. The need increases in areas like Kodiak, where most families do not live near their extended family. During Small World's last licensing study done by the state, Small World was rated one of the top programs in the state. We are the only center with an in-house Montessori program, and one of the few with Peabody early experience lessons available. Our wide variety of activities challenge the young mind on an intellectual, social, and developmental level throughout their day. We are proud of our program and our staff. As Representative Zaroff stated earlier, Small World admits children regardless of race, creed, and national origin. We are a nonprofit corporation governed by a board of directors consisting of parents and professionals within the Kodiak community. Small World participates in the daycare program and the CANA training program. We're enthusiastic about our program and encourage your support for the continuation of this viable community service. I'd also like to reiterate that blizzard conditions have kept a lot of people that would like to give given testimony today home. Schools are closed, and Marsha Oswald, the president of American Association University Women, called and said she'd be here if the snow plows could get her out of her area in time to make it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Salang. Mrs. Unwa, I think I have that name wrong. Would you pronounce it, please? Thank you.
Yes, I Sandy Unruh, and I wanted to address the budget and the revenues that Small World has at this moment. First, I wanted to discuss the their sources of revenues, and the majority of these come from parent fees. We do participate in the USDA Hot Lunch Program, and we do get a grant from the state. And CANA, the Kodiak Area Native Association, has 4 employees on our payroll, of which they pay 50%, and we pay 50% of their salary and benefits. And our total revenues come to $247,000 per year. And I wanted to discuss our major expenses. The main one being our payroll, which comes to $173,000 of the $247,000. Leaves us $74,000 for all our other expenses total. Our next major expense is our food, which we've budgeted $25,000 for this year. And insurance is a major expense. We have liability insurance and auto insurance. We have to carry restaurant insurance and unemployment insurance. Anyway, it comes to $5,000 per year. At this time, we have $11,000 budgeted for rent. And for arts and supplies, we have $8,000, which leaves us about $25,000 for all our other expenses. The reason I'm bringing this up is that the concern here locally with the local borough government is whether we can maintain a building once we have one. And we've gone over our budget, and we have a category called Repair General, which was for the Community Baptist Church of $5,000, and taking a small portion of the grocery money and from the supplies and the rent that would have gone to the Community Baptist Church. We have about $18,000 that could go into the utilities and mortgage and our rent, however you want to put it, up on another daycare center. Basically, that's all I had to say about the budget and expenses. And I wanted to get into the Mormon Church option, that alternative. And we have man that we have been discussing or getting the appraisal, discussing that option with from the church, is out of town, and he will be out of town for a while. But what he was saying to talk to his supervisor about different alternatives, maybe the church, or what they could do for us, and possibly one of those was to carry a mortgage for us. And I discussed that with him, and I said, well, you know, we're limited to the amount of money that we pay in a payment, which would be $1,000 a month, because you would still have to have some other, that would give us $500 for utilities. And then also we had asked if maybe they would consider selling below the appraised value, and also if they would consider leasing to buy. And as I said, he's out of town right now, so we haven't been able to get any final answers. He was supposed to have contacted his supervisor last week on this. And I think that our other options will be covered later. That's all I have to say right now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Unruh, for the update and the operation call. Is there any questions from the members present? No questions are desired at this time, so Mrs. Susan DeWitt.
Thank you. This is Susan DeWitt Romalia. I administer the State Daycare Assistance Program for the Kodiak Island Borough. As has already been mentioned, over half of the children that participate in the Daycare Assistance Program here do use the Small World facility, and very few of those children could be absorbed into the licensed home structure here in the community. Most of those homes are currently operating at capacity, and new homes are generally filled up pretty quickly as they're open. Even if these children could be absorbed into homes, however, I feel that it's important that children and parents have a choice between a home or a center environment. I've seen many children who have not been able to adapt to a home care situation transferred to Small World and able to thrive quite successfully in the more learning-oriented environment that is provided there at Small World. Small World is the only center available to civilian families here in Kodiak. It's an excellent center with a well-staffed, well-structured program, and it has earned community-wide respect and is considered, or has been considered, to be a permanent and definitely a vital service to our children and our economy. Since the state receives a healthy portion of its revenues from our fishing industry here, it is not perceived as inappropriate to request state assistance in meeting this need. Based on statistical trends, the need for childcare services will continue to grow in Alaska and Kodiak for the next several years. Without an adequate daycare center, Kodiak's daycare assistance program, along with many other aspects of our community's daily life, will be severely handicapped. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. DeWitt. Then the next two persons I have on the list is Patricia Holmes and Margaret Steele.
This is Patricia Holmes speaking. I'd like to say hello to everybody there in Judo and hope it's nicer where you are than it is where we are. I'm here wearing two hats today. One, I'm on the board for both Small World and for the American Association of University Women. And since Marsha Oswald, our president of AAUW, could not be here today, I am speaking for them as well as for Small World. The first thing I wanted to address is some of the things that Representative Sally Smith related to those of us who sent public opinion messages to Juno concerning House Bill 801. One of her concerns was that there should be local support for this kind of a facility, and she felt that funds should be available from our own Kodiak capital improvement budget that was submitted, I guess, down in Juno. I wanted to let the people in Juno know that the reason that we didn't do something like that is because we didn't find out ourselves that we would not have the use of the church facility until the middle of January. And it was the middle of February, and this was kind of a big surprise to us, to say the least. We had no inclination from the church until that time that they did not wish to continue our arrangement that we had had for about 13 years. So when we were faced with this, we just didn't know what would be the best route. So we explored every kind of alternative we could in the community. We talked to all kinds of other churches. We talked to public building places where we have to pay rent in a public facility. We talked to the community college. We talked to the school district. We talked to the parks and recreation. And no place had a space big enough for us. I suppose you are aware that under state licensing requirements, we're supposed to have 50 square feet of space per child in our daycare facility in order to be licensed. And this is obviously a really difficult thing to find, especially in a community like Kodiak, where all the facilities we do have are so heavily used by the people who are living here. So when it came down to it, we had very little options open to us. Since we are nonprofit, we don't have a big nest egg sitting around to help us buy a building or buy land or anything. So we felt that this was the only option open to us. We do have local support, and we have received from both the city and the borough letters supporting our needs at Small World and supporting House Bill 801. The other thing I wanted to say was just to talk about the needs of the kids here in Kodiak, and it's kind of a more personal level as a mother this time, and just talking about what will happen to those children. Representative Zaroff said that maybe these mothers wouldn't be working. I have an awful feeling that they would indeed be working, because they have to work. They need that money for their families and for their children. But what they would be doing would be leaving their children at home or finding other kinds of areas for those kids that are not nearly as suitable or wholesome for their children's development. And I really hope that you are, this is a bad time, you know, to ask for money. Every time you listen to the radio, there's less available. But our kids need it, and we sure hope you are thinking about them when you're making the decision on this deal.
Thank you very much, Pat, and certainly giving us your information of the community input. Next would be Margaret Steele.
Do you know this is the moderator in Kodiak?
Yes, Mary Jo, go ahead.
Should we continue on with our next witness?
Yes, is Margaret Steele available?
Can you hear the representative, Mary Jo?
No, I was not able to hear anything.
We were calling upon Margaret Steele, and I'll start working on the microphone.
Okay, we'll turn the microphone over to Margaret.
All right, we'll try this. Mary Jo, can you hear me now?
Shut up.
Mary Jo, can you hear me?
My name is Margaret Steele, and I have been very involved in relocating Small World Daycare Center. I would like to talk to you today about the basic alternatives that our search has boiled down to. That is the lot 2, block 17 in City Lot in Kodiak, and the Latter-day Saints Church on Resinoff Drive, also in Kodiak. The city council has more or less turned over the lot for us to construct the daycare center on, and I have been trying to find bids for building on such a lot. Building a 60 by 64 foot building on that lot has been estimated at costing around $100 per square foot, which would come to $384,000. However, Lou Schneider, who would recommend constructing a pre-engineered building on that lot, advised me that that price tag does not include the cost of excavation, which would be considerable as that lot is situated on a hillside. I talked to Gary Gilbert of Alaska Electric today, who suggested the figure of $75,000 to excavate that lot and put a retaining wall so that it would be fit for building on. I also discussed the excavation problem with Ken Knowles, who gave me a bid figure of $85 to $110 per square foot cost. He felt that excavation would drive the cost up into the $100, $110 per square foot range. Also, Mr. Knowles' plan was not for a pre-engineered building, and so if we went with his plan or that kind of a building, we would be involved in hiring an architect to design the center and a separate builder to build it. This has problems inherent in having a separate builder and designer, which we are finding out at the construction of the new main school in Kodiak. The Latter-day Saints Church is a building that has 2,970 square feet, and with minimal remodeling, it could handle the 50 children that we have now. The remodeling would involve a kitchen remodeling. The kitchen is very small and inadequate there, and a bathroom remodeling. The Latter-day Saints Church was inspected by Lieutenant McCoy of the Kodiak Fire Department, who felt that it was up to code in most areas, that 4 pole stations would be required and possibly special fire doors put in. This Latter-day Saints Church sits on, well, it sits on 2 lots, and it has a lot on either side of it, which is presently providing for parking for the church. Were we to occupy that building, the area could be well used for playground and perhaps later for expansion of our program. We have also begun a building fund in order that the community can financially support our efforts to secure a permanent and independent daycare center. I would like to interject here that we have had tremendous community support, although not all of the suggestions and the recommendations from the community have been appropriate for our needs. We have started a building fund in the amount of $10,000, and we are conducting a rummage sale, a lottery, and a letter drive among community businesses to add to this building fund. I would like to stress that we are an established program. Our administration and our daily operations are established. We are not asking for money for maintenance or operation. We simply need a place to operate out of. And I would welcome any questions that could help you in determining what would be your appropriate response. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Steele, too, for giving us the additional information as to the community support and the volunteerism behind this project. I have noted that Representative Zoiroff has been diligently writing down the notes and the latest facts that you have been giving us pertaining to the total cost. Do you have any questions, Representative Zoiroff?
No, Mr. Chairman, but I would point out there that some of this information has been gathered in the last couple of weeks, and more in the last week, and some of this is information that's included in our packets. And I would, at this time, express a very sincere thank you to the people of Small World who have, worked almost around the clock there at pretty much our request in trying to get this information so that we could have it for committee presentation today.
Thank you, Representative Zoiroff. And the next three persons that we have to give testimony, I'll read their names in order as they came across on the list. Mary Dowell, Lee Harrington, and Nancy Halza.
Representative Zoiroff and members of the House Committee, my name is Mary Dowd, and I am a teacher with the Kodiak Island Borough School District. I am also a mother of two children. To me, the most difficult part of working has been the search for a reliable childcare situation, providing a stimulating and healthy environment for my children. Small World Daycare Center provides this particular atmosphere. It provides daycare for children from all social segments of our community. Small World provides the basis for developing positive, effective, and social relationships for many of those children and provides them with the cognitive and developmental background, improving the prospect of these children becoming more responsible adults. Many of these children would not receive this proper, healthy, stimulating, consistent care. Without a daycare center, many children would be left at home, and we face the prospect of neglect and later, possibly, delinquent youth. Our society cannot afford this risk. Furthermore, 1980 U.S. Census statistics indicate more births yearly since 1975, and this trend is also reflected locally. This fact, and the fact that more mothers are forced to work to keep up with inflation, leads to the conclusion that daycare is a growing need, and one that must be addressed by the community. Our community has been very sympathetic to the current problem, but we are hoping that you can aid us in our search to solve our problem.
Good. Thank you very much, Mary. And the next person is Ms. Lee Harrington.
Harrington. I'm with the Small World Board of Directors. The most important decision parents make when they go to work is that of childcare. As a single full-time working mother, my primary daily concern is that for dependable, high-quality care for my child. Consistency is of the utmost importance in children's lives for healthy development. Small World represents some of that consistency necessary. I'm not looking just for a babysitting service. At Small World, not only are the children cared for, they are well fed, they have rest periods, the right balance of indoor and outdoor activity, and good supervision, but they offer a wide, diversified program. The children are stimulated in all areas of development and kept interested and happy. Whether it be a class with a Montessori teacher or a summer outing at the beach, Small World has met these program needs that I'm looking for. And most important, at the end of the day, I pick up a happy child, eager to return to the friends he's made in the next day's activities. I cannot find these elements anywhere else in Kodiak. I hope that the state will be able to support the continuation of this type of child care for my child and the other children of Kodiak. Also, due to the weather, we were expecting representatives from the social services in town and the mental health center. Their concerns are like those already stated, that dependable child care has to exist, and it does exist in the form of the Small World Child Care Center. Otherwise, there definitely is the possibility of child neglect and children left at home alone well before the age where they can handle this type of responsibility. As a member of the fundraising committee at Small World, I also wanted to stress that on a smaller scale, we are trying to help ourselves in the form of rummage sales, bake sales. A lottery is being planned in the near future. A dinner is being sponsored by a local restaurant, and we are gaining a great deal of community support in small ways. And I think that all of this will help, and it does arouse community interest, and people are banding together. I thank you for your time and your interest in this area.
Thank you very much, Lee. And then the last person I have on the list is Nancy Halsu.
I'm Nancy Halsu, and I'm a teacher for the Speech and Language Therapy Department in the Kodiak Island Borough School District. I appreciate the value of having a daycare center which provides educational experiences for my children. I think the legislature also appreciates the need for quality care during these formative years. One service that Small World offers is that it provides a preschool for our 3 to 5 year old special education students. It allows them to participate in and be exposed to good speech and language models in the afternoon after they've attended our special education class in the morning. Some of the things that you were wondering about is the community support and the interest the community has shown. I'm going to give you a list of some of the things that have been given to Small World in the past from the community. Fencing has been purchased and installed. Playground equipment has been donated and installed. $10,000 in siding for one of our buildings that we occupy has been given to Small World and was installed. A new oven and refrigerator, signs for the new toddler center, a donation of baked goods and a sizable cash donation for bake sales. Our peak kit, which was donated, was a $300 gift from one of the organizations in town. The installation of a new rug, repair of the bathroom, and building an addition, new oven, a van, movie projector, staff training money, and additional staff money. Donations of dump site services by local sanitation department. $1,000 for new outdoor equipment, paint, paper, and the list goes on and on. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Lee, or Nancy, I noticed that you are with the U.S. Coast Guard, and does the Coast Guard also offer facilities or services for daycare needs?
I feel that it offers daycare services, but I also feel that it does not provide an educational experience for my child, and that's one reason why I chose Small World over taking her out to the daycare center on the base. We also have very many personnel that are located in the town and would prefer to use the town facilities.
Okay, thank you very much. I see that we do have three additional persons that would like to give testimony. We have Marianne Barham, Ilva Marbach, and Wayne Marshall. Would you three be ready to give testimony?
My name is Marianne Barham, and I was asked to mention that the Coast Guard Daycare Center is not open to community members from the town of Kodiak, only to Coast Guard personnel. And that was something that Nancy wanted to explain to you. And I would just like to say that I'm a staff member at the Kodiak Women's Resource Center, and I am also the mother of two small children. And through my job at the Women's Resource Center, I see many families whose economic situation is dependent on Kodiak having a licensed daycare facility. And as a working parent, I also have a personal need for good daycare facilities in Kodiak. So I would ask you to please support Small World in their request for assistance. Our community will suffer tremendously if they have to close their doors. Thank you.
And thank you, Mary. Next would be Ilva Marbach.
My name is Ilva Marbach, and I'm a nurse practitioner and health educator in Kodiak. I feel that Kodiak needs quality daycare because of our economic community. Many of our mothers are working mothers, and Small World right now is the only facility that is providing the service. I realize that asking for quite a big capital grant, but I feel that our children are really important to our community and that this money will be well spent and well utilized if it's given. Thank you.
Thank you, Ilva. And next would be Wayne Marshall.
Good afternoon. My name is Wayne Marshall. I'm a former administrator of the State Daycare Assistance Program operated by the Kodiak Island Borough. During the time which I administered the program, we had a number of families which utilized the services of Small World Inc. And I understand that it's still being utilized. I feel that it's the only quality daycare center available within the local Kodiak community. Although Kodiak does have a system of home daycare services that are provided by several individual homes, it is not a viable alternative for many mothers who prefer to have their children placed in a facility that offers a variety of services. I'd like to thank the legislature for their consideration of this measure, but hope that they see it as being a necessity for the Kodiak community. Kodiak doesn't have the availability of many vacant buildings which an individual or a program can readily move into. A new structure is definitely needed, or perhaps money to renovate a structure, if any, could ever be located in Kodiak. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Okay, and thank you very much too, Wayne. Is there any other person in Kodiak that would like to give testimony on House Bill 801?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are no further people to give testimony at this time.
Is that Mary Jo?
Yes.
Okay, and thank you very much, too, Mary Jo, for helping us set up the network for today's testimony. Since there is no other testimony to be given, and at this time we will not be taking action on the bill, I'd like to ask Mr. Representative Zaroff if he has any closing statements.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I would hope there that you would have this up again before the committee in short time so that we could, you know, look at this here in light of some of the information that was given to us today, as well as the information that we have in our packet. And I would like to address the committee at a later time there on the various options that we have in terms of the future of Small World.
and those options basically being buying existing property or possibility of building an additional or a facility there to accommodate the need in terms of good, adequate child care facilities or facility program there in Kodiak.
And thank you for the closing statement, Representative Zaroff, and also for the public's information. They certainly realize that the tremendous drop in oil revenues has certainly put Alaska in a crunch in deciding the various needs and the vital needs for different communities as we hear from different sections of the state. And some of the serious consideration is now being done into a major bonding package, not just a small one or the one that the governor previously did, but a major rewrite so that we would be able to address more crisis needs as you need here for a child day center. But the same way, like in, I'm from Anchorage, and we met our mayor last evening. And the bill they came with for bonding of everything and anything is going to be seriously curtailed so that we won't get into the basic needs of every community for a decent lifestyle. Then also we have asked the city of Anchorage to pick up a major part of the bonding package itself so that what we cannot get directly from state revenues or through the bonding of state revenues, we'll have the people of the city of Anchorage bond themselves for what they think are basic needs. Well, without any other comments been made by anyone in the committee, I thank Kodiak again, and thank you, Representative Zaroff, and we will adjourn the meeting for the House Heads Committee.